I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
And John, we are back with a very special guest, one of our favorites.
Yes, Mer Lafferty, a longtime friend of the show, author of lots of books, including Six Wakes, and also a little novel you might have heard, the new solo novel that's out there now. She's a Hugo and Campbell Award winner, as well.
Ooh,
as a Hugo.
Welcome to the club. I got that Hugo. Woohoo!
And a Hugo Nebula loser. Only Mer would put loser in her bio there on Twitter. And like I said, one of our longtime friends. Mer, thank you for coming on the show today.
It's great to talk to you guys again.
I feel like every time we've had Mer on recently, and we have her on at this point, I don't know, annually or so, something like that, once a year,
something
once
like
every
that.
2 years, something like that. And, you know, Mer always has something big and new coming out. I'm just happy that Mer still answers my emails. She's a big hotshot now. It's like, oh, Mer won a Hugo now. Okay, I don't know about that. Oh, Mer has the new Star Wars novel out. Oh boy. Oh, she's got like a Netflix show in development. Oh, woof. So thank you for still answering my emails, Mer. I appreciate that.
Well, you know, my you are on the list for my many assistants to pass directly up to me.
Oh, okay.
But good. It was vetted by 3 or 4 people.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that I'm whitelisted on your assistant's email inbox. But yeah, lots of exciting stuff. Obviously, the solo novel just came out, and I'm sure many of our listeners have already read it. Won a Hugo recently. You know, maybe you could talk a little bit about that for a minute. So you won the Hugo for Ditch Diggers, am I correct?
Yes.
Maybe
yes.
You could tell our listeners a little bit about Ditch Diggers.
Well, I've been doing the show I Should Be Writing since 2005, and it started as and remains a show to encourage beginning writers or beginning creatives in any field, because it's a lot of general, just keep at it, it'll get better, I promise, discussion. But one time I was talking to Gail Carriger and Howard Taylor and saying, you know, we need something that talks about the business, because once you build a career as a writer, then, and you're looking around going, now what? And Matt Wallace, my co-host, and I had been doing a little part of I Should Be Writing, sometimes called Good Cop, Bad Cop, where people, I give answers that are supportive and nurturing, and he gave the cold, hard truth. And people really liked that. And so I thought if we did sort of a Good Cop, Bad Cop, but more focusing on business, where we talked about publishing, agents, your social media presence, dealing with fans, etc. And we call it Ditch Diggers because while beginning writers are allowed to write intermittently or write poorly, pros don't have the luxury of writer's block. They got to go to work because they got to eat, just like ditch diggers don't get ditch digger block. So that's why we call the show Ditch Diggers, and it's essentially about the business of being a writer. And we've been doing it for a couple of years now. Last year we were nominated for the Hugo, and this year we won.
Well, congratulations on that. It's well-deserved. And Matt, I think I always often tell this story when Matt Wallace comes up. I was an instant fan of Matt Wallace when I met him at Balticon many moons ago. I think that's the first time that I met Mer in person as well. And I don't remember exactly what he said, but Matt, you and Mer and Matt were hanging out, and I was hanging out with them in the lobby of the Balticon Hotel. And I don't remember the context, but Matt said something along the lines of all of this sycophantic bullshit. and it was like, wow, okay, I like him and I think he's right. And I think that's sort of the hard truths that Matt passes out on Ditch Diggers. And he's, it's always funny and it's always hard, but Matt's a really good guy too. So I think that's something that maybe he wouldn't like people to know, but he's a good dude. So I'm a big fan of Matt. I'm very happy both of you winning the Hugo. Well-deserved, well-deserved.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to move on into our next section. But before we do that, I want to thank everybody that backs the show on Patreon. It's patreon.com/functionalnerds. We really appreciate it. It helps us put on a good show every week. For those of you who are not backing us, that's cool. But if you want, consider becoming one of our backers. Just go to patreon.com/functionalnerds and you can back us for $1 a month, a couple dollars a month. Every bit helps. It helps us pay for hosting. It helps us pay to just keep the show running. So we really appreciate it and hope that you will consider doing that. And now let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
Mer, do you have a pick of the week ready to go, or do you want Patrick or I to go first?
Patrick or you to go first.
I'll go first because I know Patrick's a little groggy, so he might not have his ready to go, and I think he generally picks his right up until the last minute anyway. I'm going to pick a book.
Way to let people know that it's a little bit earlier than normal for me.
Oh, sorry. Yes, we're recording an hour earlier than usual, which is no big deal for me because I'm on the East Coast, but for Patrick in Colorado, it's a big deal. So Patrick, thank you for getting up early. So I'm sorry. I let people peek behind the curtain. I broke the fourth wall. Sorry.
What's your book, John?
My book is by Ryan Holiday, who I pretty much read everything that he puts out these days. Big fan. And this was a book that the subject matter I was not initially very interested in. But I like him as an author a lot. And the book was on sale one day and I was just like, well, I'll probably read it eventually because I like him. And I did read it eventually. And that eventually was in the last few weeks. And the book is called Conspiracy. Peter Thiel, I think it's Thiel. I'm not sure it's Thiel or Thiel. He's the founder of PayPal. Peter Thiel, Hulk Hogan, Gawker, and the Anatomy of Intrigue. And for people who probably listened to this show, you may remember like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, there was that big court case of Hulk Hogan versus Gawker, because Gawker posted the Hulk Hogan sex tape, and Hulk Hogan eventually won his lawsuit against Gawker for like $100 million and essentially bankrupted Gawker. But there is a whole behind the scenes thing that wasn't unearthed until after the fact, where essentially Peter Thiel, who is a billionaire and, like I said, founder of PayPal, early investor in Facebook, all of that kind of thing. Not to give too much of the story away, but essentially they outed Peter Thiel early on as a gay man, and he was not happy about that sort of breach of privacy, and he did not like Gawker for that and held a grudge. And in the shadows for almost a decade, planned how to destroy Gawker, and this is how he did it. He backed Hulk Hogan, spent millions and millions of dollars to pay for Hogan's legal fees to essentially bankrupt Gawker. So it's almost like fiction, this book, because you're like, well, that couldn't have happened. That's crazy. So it's a intriguing story, especially if you're someone who lives some of your life on the internet, as many of us do. I was riveted from start to finish. So it's a great read and some sort of great lessons to learn along the way. So once again, that pick, it's Conspiracy, Peter Thiel, Hulk Hogan, Gawker, and the Anatomy of Intrigue. And the author is Ryan Holiday. I recommend it. That is my pick.
That reminds me of the documentary on Netflix, the docuseries Wild Wild Country.
That's the one with the cult and stuff?
Yeah, because you sit there and you watch it and you go, I couldn't have written a story this compelling or this weird.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's the whole truth is stranger than fiction.
Absolutely.
Kind of thing.
I was thinking as I was reading this, I haven't heard anything about it, but I'm thinking like somebody's got to make a movie about this. This would be such a good movie. I mean, I'm sure there's rights and all that, and who knows who gets what rights. Like, does the author get some? Does Hogan and Peter Thiel got to get a cut? Like, I don't know how any of that sort of real life to movie, like the Facebook movie, what was that? Was it Social Network? Was that the name of that?
Yeah, something like that.
Like something like that. I think this movie could be done in a similar way. So
I liked it because the whole concept of a Hulk Hogan sex tape kind of killed the idea of celebrity sex tapes.
There's
and a, so now we don't have to have them anymore, which is awesome.
Right. And that's kind of where it comes from, because so much of...
No, I'm talking about just the idea of seeing Hulk Hogan in a sex tape killed the entire celebrity sex tape
movement. No one wanted to do it anymore after that.
No one wants to see that.
Yes, exactly. But it's a very interesting read, and I think most people, even, and again, that was not a subject that I was particularly interested in, just that I really liked the author, and I bought the book on sale one day, and I'm glad I read it, because it's great. So that's my pick. Patrick, what's your pick?
The Dragon Prince on Netflix.
Oh, I haven't watched it yet, but I'm into it. So let our listeners know about that, because that's very high on my to watch next list.
So the thing that people are complaining about is the animation.
Yes, I've seen.
The creators have acknowledged that the animation did not come out the way they had intended it to. So you kind of got to get through the animation a little bit, but I feel like the story itself and the characters are wonderful. And it's a fine successor, I think, to the Avatar stuff.
Right, it's some of the same creators, correct?
Yeah. If you're looking for more of Avatar and Korra, obviously you can go to the comics where they've continued Korra's story, which is really, really good. But this it has that same feel, has that same concept as the Avatar shows. And... I think it's just a great story. They've done a lot of world building, and they've finally created a character in the Moon Elves who run the way I do, you know, with your head down, your arms back and up, and bouncing from tree to tree to tree to rock to tree to rock to tree to tree to tree. That's exactly the way I run in real life. So
you're very graceful. I've seen you run. So yeah. That's good. No, I'm really looking forward to it. The couple articles I saw in the animation was along the lines that they tried to sort of split the difference between traditional
TV and
computer. And it, at certain points, certain action scenes come off quite jerky, like almost stop motion.
Right. And other people have also, kind of compared it to rotoscoping.
Okay. Yeah. Same idea.
Which was really unusual. So it's funny because the other big animated show that's getting a lot of press right now is Star Wars Resistance. And one of the main complaints about that one is the animation style. Mm-hmm. So I feel like these animators are taking some risks and they're trying to do some different things to try to be cool and to make their show stand out. And it's falling a little bit flat with viewers so far. The thing I will say is when I got to the last episode of The Dragon Prince, I didn't realize it was the last episode. And I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, that's always disappointing. But cool. I'm glad you give it the thumbs up, because I definitely want to get into that next. I just finished the most recent thing that I was watching the other night. So I'm ready to pick up on something new. So I am looking forward to that. And along the same lines, as you, I'm sure, also heard, Netflix is funding a live action Avatar series with the original creators in charge. Yep. So that's exciting, because obviously the live action movie they made is universally panned. I never even saw it. It looked terrible. And I loved the cartoon so much, I didn't want to taint my feelings about the show with that. So the fact that they're hiring the original creators to do it is really exciting. And I that's not going to be out for another year or two, but really looking forward to that. So.
And the creators, they're one of their first comments about doing that project is, and this is our chance to fix the whitewashing,
right,
and actually have a diverse cast.
Absolutely. So it's exciting. It's exciting times. Exciting times. Mer, what is your pick?
Can I go back and just say that with the Dragon Prince thing, it started slow. I didn't care. I don't care about the animation. The animation was fine for me, but it started, like the first episode felt slow and as cliche as cliche could get. And basically I was hanging out in the TV room with my husband and he was watching and I was playing a computer game and I'm just like, why is he watching this drivel? I hadn't heard of it, but it was just like, I thought it was awful. And then like second, third, it just got better and better and better. And so I see the appeal and where people are really excited about it. But I thought the first episode was crap. It was just like the moon elves and the dragons and the eggs and the, I mean, it's like, come on, give me something original.
And it was also like a part one of two or something. So you had to watch the second episode to even complete. So I get what you're saying.
Yeah. So again, I agree that it's awesome, but if you check it out and you think it's crap, give it at least three episodes because it does really get a lot better. My pick is Root, which is a board game that my family and I just picked up. It's asymmetrical. It's a very strange game where you play, every person plays almost their own mini game, and they have their own goals within a forest and their own rules. But as people try to achieve their own goals, they're going to run into each other. And that's when the conflict happens. And it's just a fascinating game with so much work put into it, because you can play the birds who are trying to regain their old, I keep thinking of them as Centauri because they're once a grand empire and they've fallen and they really want to regain that. And they are played by very strict order of operations. It's almost like a computer program. So every time you play a card, you have to play a card in one of the four orders of operation, and then you have to do the orders of operation. And if you have, I need to travel to this area, but you can't, then your entire government goes into turmoil, and your leader gets thrown out, and then you have to get a new leader with new rules, not like huge rules, but you know, each leader has a little bit of a bonus, and start all over again. And then you've got the vagabond, which is just this little raccoon who wanders around and trades with people and can pretty much be the kingmaker, I think, but also has their own agenda to gain points. And it's just brilliant because it is four different mini games that work together well, because each, when you do have to interact, either fighting or trading, the brilliance of the balance comes in. So I've played it twice. I haven't played it with four people yet. I think that would be the best game because all four animal groups have balances. And it seems that that would be the weakness, is that it's hard to get a good three-player game or two-player game because each one has sort of a mirror. Not even a mirror. That would be too much like itself. But
An equal and opposite?
Yeah, sort of an equal and opposite. So it's a fascinating game, and I highly recommend it if you're into board games and like complexity.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah, and cute animals.
Yeah, what's the name of it?
It's called Root.
Root. Cool. Yeah, I feel that I'm so jealous of everybody that's into games, because I feel like I just didn't get that experience in my formative years, and anytime I've attempted to do it, I always, like, it just doesn't appeal to me enough to continue on. And maybe I just don't have the stamina to keep going. But I know Murr, I know you're a big gamer, and I know Patrick has game night that he does, or did at least until recently. Yeah, it sounds like fun if you get the right group of people. I guess that's probably the key. The right group of people. So
very much the key.
I think you need to play. I think you need to go to a convention, John, where there's a bunch of authors, and play Cards Against Humanity with us.
Yes, I've seen it. I've witnessed that, but not joined in on it. We actually got
shut down at Pikes Peak Writers Conference because we were sitting in the lobby playing Cards Against Humanity until like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and people finally started complaining in the second floor rooms that we were making too much noise and laughing too much.
Oh, you crazy nerds and your car.
I know. Yes, we are. I wanted to throw out one more thing about the Dragon Prince. It's interesting to contrast Dragon Prince with Disenchanted, which is the other animated show that Netflix put out by Matt Groening, the creator of The Simpsons. I want to say the first episode of that was actually like an hour and a half or something crazy like that. At least that's how it felt. That show I could not get into at all.
That has had mixed reviews. Yeah, some people kind of like it. It's I don't know. I mean, look, I'm pretty out on The Simpsons, and I never watched Futurama. Although I feel like everybody in our community, that's like their favorite
show. Love Futurama. Yeah. But it goes back to what Murr was saying about cliches. It felt like it was just all cliches.
Hmm.
And had been done before.
Yeah. Yeah. Murr, like, you know, we were talking, I'm curious as a busy creative person that you are, what's your, you know, you were talking about how your husband was watching The Dragon Prince and you ended up watching it a little bit with, do you watch a lot of these shows that we talk about? Do you have like one that you go through a little bit? Like how much of your time is spent in like watching a show, like on a typical day, week, what have you?
Honestly, not a lot. I don't watch a lot of TV, but if you looked at my Netflix stats, you would think I was lying because my favorite background noise is a show that I've seen several times, and so I can enjoy it when I hear it, and when I miss some of it, I don't actually miss anything because I already know what happened. So I'm almost like when I'm cooking or cleaning or something, I'll have my iPad playing The Office or The Good Place and just cycling through those just as background thing. But actually sitting down and paying attention to new shows, not very often. About the only thing I'm watching right now is The Good Place because it just came back this week. I think there are a couple I feel behind on and I would like to binge. So yeah. I'm behind on Game of Thrones, behind on The Expanse. And Disenchanted didn't really grab my interest.
Yeah.
And but I'll probably watch The Dragon Prince when it comes back, yeah.
It's interesting because I watch maybe an episode and a half of something at night, anywhere from half an episode to two episodes. It really just depends on if I'm too sleepy. A lot of times I start watching TV at like 9:30 at night and 20 minutes in, I'm starting to fall asleep already. But
You're old.
I'm super old. I'm like, it's surprising.
And you're younger than me. I have no excuse.
I know. I just wake up early too. Anyway, I'm trying to get the problem that I find now, not a problem. This is, you know, it's something I've just sort of considered a way of spending my time is that in keeping up with, and I don't have cable anymore. So anything I watch, it's just either on Netflix or Hulu or something that I buy, but just kind of keeping up with the stuff that I've already watched is becoming too much to keep up with, you know, like forget starting something new. It's like, I just finished the last season of all the CW DC shows. And that was like a lot to get through. And I liked them, some more than others, but I'm really considering like, you know, maybe next year I got to cut a couple of these out. Cause that's the problem with those CW DC shows is that because there's four of them, five, if you count Black Lightning, which I didn't watch at all yet. Every year that if you're waiting till they show up on Netflix, it's like, bam, 80 something episodes go. It's like, you have to catch up on four seasons worth of viewing. And I don't know if that's the best way to spend my time, considering I feel like there's a lot of slow episodes within that. So again, it's a good problem to have because there's lots of good stuff to watch where back in the day it was not as much. But
well, if I can interject, what Murr's describing about having shows on in the backgrounds, I do the exact same thing.
Mm.
And I have burned out DVD players because I will put in Buffy the Vampire Slayer in the background and just have Buffy going. Angel as I'm writing or doing stuff. So I totally get that. It's almost like white noise that's going on in the background.
Yeah.
But it's not enough to distract you. It's just something to have kind of going.
Now, Mar, do you write with something like that on?
Oh, good Lord, no.
Okay.
No.
That's what I was curious about that.
Yeah. I do. And I know it can be dangerous. I mean, that's how Jim Butcher named two characters after characters from Ally McBeal. Georgia and Billy. Georgia and Billy were named after Georgia and Billy in Ally McBeal, and he didn't realize it until after the book came out.
Interesting. Interesting. So no, when you're...
I usually listen to movie soundtracks.
So what have you been listening to lately in your writing? What kind of stuff do you have on in the background while you're writing these days?
Usually more recent Star Wars music or Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, that's a good one. That's Junkie XL is like, was his electronica name. What's his real name? I can't think of it'll come to me. Anyway, that's a good.
Why were you listening to Star Wars music, Murr? Did you write a Star Wars novel?
Actually, that's not why, but yes, I did. It's good music.
It is. I have it all in my Spotify.
Now, obviously, there's the John Williams stuff, but have you listened to the Rogue One soundtrack and the Solo soundtrack as well? And what do you think of those?
I don't have the Rogue One soundtrack, but I do have the Solo soundtrack, and I like it a lot. One of my favorite things in the past couple of weeks was finding one of the Star Wars sites or fan sites did an interview with the composer and just finding out where some of the songs came from. And I'm going to forget a detail about this, but the music for Enfys Nest, one of the characters in Solo, he actually found I think it was Belgian. Mm. It's some sort of Eastern European women's chorus that did not do any sort of high-pitched soprano stuff, but did very strong alto type.
Is it
vocal?
Is it music. Bulgaria?
Maybe.
I feel like it's because I feel like I've heard about the Bulgarian women's chorus.
Yeah.
Not specifically in this one, so I wouldn't be surprised if it was Bulgaria. But anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, but yeah, it's just amazing music, and it fits the character so well. So yeah, John Williams didn't do it, but I think there's some good composers out there that can pick up the baton.
Nice.
Baton.
Nice.
Duo meanings.
I think John Powell is the composer for Solo.
I think so.
Yeah, he's done a lot of great stuff. He's done a lot of scores to animation. I think he did the How to Train Your Dragon movies. He also, one that I've seen just because my son has watched this movie 10,000 times, is Rio, the one with the tropical birds came out a while back. By the way, great movie. Like, you wouldn't think it is, but it's fantastic. And Murr, I think you've talked about this a lot before in terms of storytelling. Rio follows the hero's journey step by step. We know that this is a story about a bird. It's total hero's journey. It meets it beat for beat. So after watching it many times with my son, I'm like, yep, all right, this is the turning away from the quest, and this is it's great. So if you're a storyteller, that's a great movie to watch because it's a great example in a totally different setting, in a totally different group of characters, of something that follows the hero's journey. So if you're someone that's into that idea, I totally recommend watching Rio because of that. And the music's awesome for it because and I'm not surprised that John Powell got hired to do a Star Wars movie because he is a very John Williams-like composer in terms of his use of leitmotifs, which is essentially the little themes that each character gets. And it appears in different contexts throughout the movie. And he does that brilliantly in Rio. And I noticed that because I've watched that movie many, many times. I haven't really analyzed the Solo soundtrack yet, but I'd be curious to see if that sort of comes off in that movie as well. But cool. That's really good. Also, another quick recommendation for if you are into movie soundtracks, and I don't know if you've seen this or not, there is a really good documentary. I believe it is on Hulu, and it is, I think it's called Score. And it's just, a 90-minute documentary about film composers.
Cool.
And kind of a little bit of the history. So it starts with like silent film stuff where there would be compositions written that would be played in the theater by a piano player or like a little small orchestra. So the music was played live. So it like starts there and then goes through, most of the big names that you've heard of and gets into all the modern people. And actually has junky XLs in it. He talks a lot through it. So that is a really good doc that's out there. And I think it's on Hulu, like I said. I think it's just called Score. So totally worth watching. Now, Mara, in terms of your how you manage your creative time, you have a lot of different things. You have your original novels. You just did the solo novel. You have your podcasts. You have a lot of different things going on. So how do you manage those various jobs, those various tasks? So they're all, I would imagine, require a different skill set.
Honestly, I don't manage it very well. managing my time is a constant struggle for me. I'm easily distracted by shiny things. I'm easily overwhelmed. There's a lot of people, I'm sorry I have to go on this tangent, but it bothers me a lot. A lot of people say, you know, I'd love to be a writer, be a musician, whatever, if I could just get 3 months to myself, or, you know, when I retire, or if I became independently wealthy, I would just go off into a cabin and write. And I'm like, no, you wouldn't. If you don't write when you have 30 minutes, you're not going to write when you have 8 hours. You're not. So it's like, when you have this spread of time, it's hard to decide what to do when, or at least for me. So it's, and you know, the distractions of working from home, the dogs and the laundry and all that stuff, it's prioritizing is a major problem. But with regards to my different projects, I have learned that they don't actually take a lot of time. And if, you know, a couple of focused hours a week for the podcasts, and I'm also co-editor of Escape Pod and stuff, and then trying to dedicate a little bit of time every day to writing, it can be done. It's just finding the focus and the prioritization to do it.
I think a good quote with this, and I'm thinking about it because I feel like I got it initially from Cameron Hurley, a very good author that I think a lot of our audience knows of her work. She had a quote that was similar to this, but the initial quote, or the one that most people may have heard of before, is by Theodore Roosevelt. And it is, do what you can with what you have where you are. And I think that's great advice for someone who wants to do something creative, because you will almost never have a quote ideal situation in which to be creative.
Sure.
It's almost impossible, because even, you know, well-known authors like yourself, you have a life, like you have a family, you mm-hmm. got bills to pay, you got jobs to do that aren't writing related sometimes, yep. You know, I think there's this misconception that maybe some people have that once you know, we'll talk about it within publishing, but like, oh, well, once you have a book that's out in a bookstore, like you're a millionaire, right? I mean, you're a millionaire and you know, just go into your office every day and you write and it's a great life. And
that's the Hollywood vision of the author. The author that writes the book that becomes the big bestseller and they live off the royalties for 10 years.
Right. And
starting Californication. At the point of signing the contract.
Right.
Yeah. It's Californication, right? It's that show. It's he wrote one book and he's been living off the money ever since.
Right. And I'm sure, look, I'm sure that example exists. I'm
sure. Harper Lee.
Yeah, exactly. She only wrote the one book. But I know there are these like debut authors that have wildly successful, continually successful books. And yep, that happens. That is probably super rare, especially when you consider the amount of books that are published every year. And that's not even counting self-publishing. Then you throw all the self-published books in that pile and it's, yeah, almost everybody has other work they do or, you know, has many different jobs within it. So if you want to do that, yeah, you have to find how to do it. And I think Mer's point is really important to take in. It's like, yeah, if you're not doing it now in your life, suddenly having 8 hours a day to do it isn't going to make you do it. You've got to find a way to work it into your life and to make it a priority. Do you sort of have certain times of the day that you like to do certain things? Because even within writing a novel, you know, there's outlining, there's editing, there's proofreading, there's all these different things. Do you have like, oh, well, this time of the day, I like to do my outlining. This time of the day, I like to do my actual writing. This time of the day. No, it's just whenever a job needs to be done, you do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like, again, it's embarrassing how difficult it is. But, you know, ideally, first thing in the morning, getting writing done feels the best. I'm also very driven to get writing done about an hour before I pick up my daughter when I realize I've wasted the entire day. And I realize that now is the last point I'm really going to have the focus and the energy to do it. But no, I don't do different times a day for different stuff, especially since I don't outline a lot. And so when I am outlining, I'm usually not working on anything else. So it's not like I outline in the morning and then write in the afternoon. I outline well before I ever write the book, if I have to outline, which I hate.
Are you more of a pantser?
Yes, 100%.
And here's what's funny. Whenever people say pantser to me at conventions and writers' conferences and stuff, I always say, well, like Merle Lafferty, I prefer to call myself a discovery writer.
But that's accurate, though. I think that's a way that many writers go about doing it. You have some writers who are hardcore planners. We've had hundreds of authors on this show, and some of them are discovery writers, and some of them write 100-page outlines detailing. And look, I've enjoyed books by both types. Whatever you got to do to get there, you get there. But that's why I think people who listen to this show or just in this community at all, it's why it's so fascinating, because it's not a science. Not like, oh, if you just do this, this, and this, bam, you'll write great. It's like, nope, everyone's got to kind of find a way to do it. And if you pick your five favorite authors, chances are they all write in very different ways. It would be very unlikely that all five of them would follow the exact same methodology for going about writing.
Yeah.
Now, have you learned from certain authors, like just whether you know them personally or not, or if you've just, are there certain authors that you like that you tried to model how they go about their writing life?
Not really.
No.
I've taken some advice I've gotten from authors on my show of little things. The one that leaps to mind is Grant Faulkner, the head of NaNoWriMo, says sometime in every October he goes on a time hunt to look at his calendar and find out when he's not using time, and then he writes down that time, which is when he's going to be writing in November. But I don't think I've taken anybody else's routine or anything to heart. Except, I remember back in 2006, Cory Doctorow told me that you should not have any sort of ritual surrounding your writing. Because if you rely on a ritual when you don't have the ritual, you won't be able to write. If you don't have a ritual, then you can pull out your laptop in an airport and get a chapter done while you're waiting for your plane. Mm-hmm. And I've always tried to take that to heart. I know a lot of people love their rituals and it helps them, but I've always tried to think, you know, I don't want to start out with the security blanket. So I'm just not going to hold on to it because I don't want to have to force myself to lose it.
I think that's wise advice, because that is something over the years that I've had to discover myself, because I am someone who is totally, even though I'm not a writer, I'm totally into rituals and habits and routines and the whole deal. And yes, routines can be healthy. Routines can help you accomplish a lot, but that is not real life all the time. You are going to have days, many days, most days, in fact, where you are not going to be able to have that routine, and you will get frustrated. You may not do your creative work at all that day then. And what I noticed, which was really bad, is that you get mad at the people around you because they're living in your world. You're like, how dare you? This is my sacred time.
Yeah.
How dare you interrupt? And it's like, that is not a way to live. Well, I've learned the hard way that that is not a way to live. So a schedule, a routine, not bad, but best to have routines that can be flexible.
Yeah.
Because you're never going to be able to do your exact thing every day. It's going to change. So I think that's excellent advice by you and through Cory Doctorow. So cool. So you got the Solo book out. So when was the release date for Solo, by the way?
The movie or the book?
The book.
September 4th.
September 4th. So it's been out for, as people are listening to this, just about a month. Congratulations on that. I don't know if I passed that along, but
thank you.
I'm very excited. Patrick and I have been doing this show for so long that I feel like a lot of the people that we know, we know most of the Star Wars writers now because we knew them before they got the Star Wars gig. So
yeah,
I'm very excited for that. And I hope you're experiencing some nice success with it. What else do you have coming up then, other than Solo? What new books are coming out, or what new books are you working on now, or what projects would you like to share with our audience?
I can't tell you.
Okay. All right.
I have one book that hasn't been announced yet that I'm working on edits.
Okay.
And then there's some other stuff in the works that I can't announce yet. So,
okay. But things are in the works.
I have one thing coming out next year that I hope someday will be announced before it comes out, at least. But I got the licensing deals, and so I really haven't written anything original since Six Wakes. And I should be writing. I did a book for the show that came out last fall. It'll be a little while longer before anything original comes out from me, but something is in the works.
Well, you know it's good if you can't talk about it, so that's good.
Yes,
that's always a good sign when people.
I wish I could. I mean,
yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, do you have any con appearances coming up?
Yes. You said this is going up next week.
Yes.
I will be at New York Comic Con this coming weekend.
Ooh.
And then I am done traveling for conventions until January, when I'll be going to Confusion, and February I'll be going to BossCon, and then I'll be doing WorldCon next year in Dublin. So that's all I have planned right now.
Okay. Well, that's pretty good. So if you are going to be at Comic-Con, go visit Mer's booth.
Yes. I'll be with the Del Rey booth with Star Wars people.
Nice. Nice. Who else is going to be there? Do you know?
Delilah Dawson's going to be there. Chuck Wendig. Justina Ireland. I can't wait to meet her. That's all that leaps to mind right now.
Awesome.
I know there are others.
Well, that's a fine bunch of folks that you will be with there. So that is very cool. All right. So everybody go and check Mer out. Just Google Mer Lafferty. You'll find lots of cool stuff, whether it's her podcasts or her Twitter or her books or Solo or any of that good stuff. Go and check all that out. And Mer, thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate the time. For us, once again, if you dig what we're doing, interviews with folks like Mer here, please consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick, what would you like to leave our listeners with today?
I will be at the 50th Mile High Con here in Denver. It's going to be October 19th, 20th, and 21st. So come on, people.
Yes.
You got to come, show up. They're going to have guests of honors from throughout all of their conventions showing up. So this is your opportunity to see a ton of science fiction and fantasy authors all gathered in one place for a very special event. So please come check it out. Go to milehighcon.org and look at all the names of the people that are coming. It's going to be pretty cool. Connie Willis is almost always there. Carol Berg is almost always there. She's going to be there this year. Just go and look, and you'll see tons and tons of names and great people. So, and then me, I'll be there too.
Well, you're a great person too, Patrick.
Also a great person. Yeah.
Yes.
I try.
Yes. All right, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, smoke.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
Still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.